And I'm trucking on, I'm trucking on. Well, I'll move her on down the line. Another time will do me fine. I'm trucking on.
Howdy, friends, and welcome to Trucking On. I'm your host, Ward Richmond. I really appreciate you tuning in today, and I hope you enjoy the show. Welcome back, y'all. For now, this is my final live in Las Vegas episode recorded at the Encore Hotel. It's my favorite hotel in Las Vegas by far. Steve Wynn just knows what he's doing. High quality all over the place. Who else happened to be staying here? Also here on a business trip? My homeboy, Jake Bobek. We grew up together. You'll find a lot of my high school friends are going to be on this podcast, obviously. And that's because they're some of the most incredible humans that have ever existed, in my opinion. And Jake is one of them. So, also, Jake is one of my few friends from high school. I've got a couple of others, but he also is a tenant rep broker, just like me. But he moved to LA back in when we were in our 20s. And that's why we all like to jab him when he comes home to Dallas and call him LA Jake. And Jake has risen to the top. He's an executive vice president at CB Richard Ellis and absolutely dominates as a tenant rep broker representing clients all over the world. And above and beyond that, we tell some crazy stories from our early 20s that we spent together in Dallas and high school stories. And I love this man. And so glad that he joined me, and we're about to get going. So have as much fun as I did with this. All right, let's go. Jake Bobek.
Where is this recording to?
This is recording to my Zoom H6 recorder. Welcome to Trucking On.
Thank you for having me. I'm very happy to be here. We're in Las Vegas. I would just like to say that I did have a meeting this afternoon.
Who was it with?
And I have two meetings tomorrow.
Who is your meeting with?
Business people. And two meetings tomorrow. So I am here on work.
Are you meeting with people that are like prospective clients of yours? Or would you say that?
One colleague and two prospective clients.
Okay. Cool. Did you see Scott Donaghy?
I did not see Scott Donaghy. Hey, Scott. How are you? Sorry, we didn't call you. Did you call him?
Did I call Scott?
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
Ooh. Scott, if you're listening, we're sorry. We love you.
We'll reach out to him.
Yeah, we'll call him tomorrow.
Yeah.
Maybe tonight.
I just saw him. He was in town in Dallas. So
that's great.
I caught up with him a little bit. We watched the last Dallas Cowboys game of the season when they lost San Francisco at Merritt's house. So Merritt, Scott, me, Andrew Morris, Lauren Wolf was there.
Oh my God, that's fun. A crew.
It really was. And I don't live in Lakewood anymore. I live nearby, like 5 minutes away, but it's not Lakewood. And going there and like seeing all those people I grew up with and being in Lakewood, and then like Merritt's kids and Lauren's kids are all friends, and Merritt's son goes to jail long now.
Alec, I know, does. It's crazy.
And hearing about that, and that is how we met, is growing up in Lakewood and living blocks away from each other. You lived on one of the greatest streets, and as did I think, in Lakewood, like just windy streets there on the south side of Lakewood with all the trees and hills and everything.
It's great. Such near a the lake, place. Near the park.
It's like a it's little
glorious.
Mecca.
And it's glorious.
We're like 10 minutes from downtown Dallas, but then you feel like you're not in a city.
For all you people moving to Allen and Prosper, what are you doing?
What are Stop you doing?
It. Stop that.
I had
Move to Lakewood.
I had the incredible developer on, George Billingsley.
Okay.
Do you know George Billingsley?
Trammell Crowe's? Yeah. I don't know, but yeah.
Yeah, he's Trammell Crowe's grandson.
Got it.
And he said like one of his investment things that he would do, because I'm going to ask you that question, like what would you invest money in if you had $100 million? We'll get to that later. But he said like buy land north of Dallas because it's like that's where it keeps trending to. Because why would I go south and go against the tide, like against the flow of the river when it just keeps going north and people just keep moving north?
They're
going
to connect it, Dallas to Oklahoma.
But I'm very much a snob in that I will always, as long as I live in Dallas, until I join you in Santa Barbara where you live, oh my gosh, like I can't wait to get into that. But I'm going to live in East Dallas. I'm not going to move to Highland Park. I'm like, no offense to Highland Park people, but I'm on the east side of 75 always.
East side. And east now side, trucking?
I'm on the east side of White Rock Lake now.
Yeah, it's great.
My kids, if we stay where I live now and they stay in public school like they are, like my daughter's in, Levi will be in public school next year, then they would go to Bryan Adams.
Ooh.
Rival high school.
Oh, we have a story about that school. We'll try not to go down that rabbit hole, but
I think we should.
I don't know.
So Woodrow, I loved Woodrow. I think you did too, right?
It's great. It was a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun. You were asking me right before you missed the record, you Ward. So we did about 10 minutes of this before Ward forgot to push the record button or something happened. But you were asking me, I think you were asking me if I was a good student. Is that what you asked? And I think the answer to that is I did good enough. I could have done better. But I think the difference in the like public education versus the private education is the private schools teach you how to study better earlier.
No doubt. Public's more like, let's make sure you pass the test and we don't get fired.
And don't get knifed by like, somebody in the yard. Yeah.
And if you are about to get knifed as a teacher, I'm going to look the other way. I'm just as scared as you are.
Oh, man.
I don't think I was ever truly concerned about being knifed, but man,
Maybe
a stray bullet. It was wild. Like when you think,
I'm glad we're still alive.
Yeah. And you played baseball and tennis.
Baseball and tennis.
We did not play sports together.
Nope.
I played football and track. I did swimming.
I was not big enough for football.
Yeah.
You were though. You were good.
Merritt played football. He was like your size.
Yeah, but he started playing when he was like 4 and he was scrappy enough.
Yeah.
I broke my collarbone like 3 times and went out for freshman football, and I was
you went out for it though.
Oh yeah, but I was not very good. The coaching wasn't good.
No, they didn't teach
you how to do anything. So you show up like I wasn't big enough, and it was like I think I got one tackle. Like some guy from, Siegelville ran over me really hard, but I tackled him.
Did you last the whole freshman year season?
Yeah, but I didn't play much. I tackled the guy by his face mask, and they didn't call. Right. They didn't call penalty.
Yeah.
So I think that's
a handy thing to tackle people by if
we're legal. Like 2 fingers falling backwards.
grab that face mask.
So I played baseball. That was fun. We had a good time. We had a great time.
Were you guys good? The football team,
we were good.
We got worse
good.
And worse during my
We were really good like my freshman, sophomore year. And we had some guys, we had a couple pitchers who were really good. I mean, they threw like high 80s, low 90s. The high school baseball thing is all about pitching. If you have good pitching, you're really good.
Who is the best pitcher?
She's going to be Robert Padilla.
Oh, yeah. The Wolf.
They called him the Wolf. That's right, dude. He was a big boy. He was big. He threw hard.
Yeah. He could have played football, but he didn't. He just was all about baseball.
Yeah. He was good. He was a good dude. We had a good couple years, and then we sucked the last 2 years. We had fun.
The dropout rate at Woodrow was so huge. Like, our freshman class had something like 500 people, and then we graduated like 150 people or something like that.
I think the goal was 200 or bust.
Yeah, you guys
out
had
of 500. Like, we couldn't add higher goal than that. And then I think our baseball team, like, I didn't know it, but like, I think they all smoked a lot of weed before the game. And like, I was really confused, like, why. Like, I was like, oh, these guys are pretty good athletes, and like, they should be hitting the ball. And then they just sucked in the games. And then, like, a few years after high school, we were hanging out. They're like, oh, yeah, dude, we would just get like totally stoned before the games.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, so I was the only one out there.
I can't even imagine. Like, I'm not the only one, but. I sucked at baseball always. I didn't last through elementary school playing baseball because I'm blind. I have horrible vision.
Ooh, and that's a problem for baseball.
Yeah, it really is.
Good for football.
Football didn't matter. I mean, gosh, great vision would have been a blessing, but yeah, playing offensive line, you just need to see blurs and you're fine. But, We would smoke cigarettes before football games our senior year at Merritt's house. Oh, my God. Because his dad smoked indoors so he could just get away with it. And I mean, we went 0-10. So I think it was like we took it seriously for a while. And then halfway through the season, we were like, let's just go smoke cigarettes and like watch TV before the game. I mean, it was just
Merritt, sorry to bring this up, but how crazy was the Drury's house?
Oh, my God.
The upstairs where the parents never went. Because they were like too grossed out or didn't want to know what was going on up there.
Well, Merritt's like siblings. He's the youngest of like five or something. And the oldest were like probably 30 years old by the time we were in high school. So his parents were so checked out. Like they did not care. And so, I mean, we would literally just like go over there and I mean, anything goes, right?
It was a lot of fun.
And those were the days.
Merritt knew how to take advantage of it.
He did. And then you graduated and went to LSU.
The Princeton of the South.
Yeah.
Award.
The Princeton of the South. How? What brought you there? Did you always want to go there?
No. You know, it was a, you know, I wasn't going to go to a nice fancy Ivy League school like you. So I was looking the state school route. So I applied to University of Texas, or I was going to go to LSU. And I think LSU, the drinking age was a little lower. And I really thought New Orleans was cool. And it'd be kind of fun to go do the SEC Southern fraternity thing.
So, which fraternity?
SAE.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. We should give a shout out to all the brothers out there.
I was a Sigma Chi in Hoke.
Wow. Wow.
I didn't want to join a fraternity.
Can we edit that part out?
No, not at all.
But no, it was, I wanted to do like the South. I mean, that's where my brain was when you're in high school and like making decisions, right?
You're making good decisions.
I don't know if that was a good decision. It actually was like looking back, it was a glorious time. I have a lot of good friends there. It's a super unique place. The football games are great. A lot of friends in New Orleans, which is also a unique place. It's glorious. It's a great, great place.
I've never hung out there with you.
We would have a good time.
I know John Pettigo went there one time and hung out with you.
That's when I was still learning the ropes down there. I didn't quite know him. Now would be a different experience. We'd have a nice meal.
Didn't he jump out of the car or something?
That did happen.
Did Pettigo?
While it was moving.
Why did that happen?
He got in a fight with his friend from Emerson.
Emerson.
In the back of my car while I was driving. And he jumped out of my car while I was going about 5 miles an hour.
Oh my!
That was a night. Hey, John.
This is a crazy story. One time involving him jumping out of a car in Amsterdam. And
This is you. I wasn't there.
This is when we played in the band and we were in Amsterdam and we took magic mushrooms, which are legal in Amsterdam. Ladies,
did you microdose or macrodose?
We unintentionally. Heroic dosed.
Wow.
It was not good.
Wow.
It wasn't good. Like we thought like maybe we had died and we're stuck in Amsterdam purgatory walking around in circles for the rest of our lives. I mean, anyway, so this happened. And we're driving home in a taxi cab in Amsterdam. And this is before GPS was on cars in America, but they have GPS in Europe at this point. But it looked like it was a police car because that's the only cars in America that had GPS in 2002. And John saw that and he believed that we were in a police car. And he's like, I'm going to jump out of the police car. And I'm like, dude, this is a taxi. I 100% guarantee you don't jump out of the car. Thankfully, I kept him from jumping out of the car. We made it home safely.
What's his deal with jumping out of cars?
I know. That's thing? Funny.
It's so weird. So we had a glorious night. So this is what happened. So John comes into Baton Rouge with his two buddies from Emerson. And if you can imagine a couple kids from the Northeast, John had the Northeast, but the South, right? He had
the swagger.
He had the swag. So he brings his couple buddies from the Northeast to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, like culture clash, right? But we had a good time. So I take them, we drive to New Orleans in the afternoon. We drink all day.
What year was this in college?
98, sophomore year, second year. We drink all day. I drank less because I was driving, but I probably shouldn't drive. So I drove all the way back from New Orleans to Baton Rouge. This is the 90s. Yeah, this is an hour drive. Well, we should drive up. Now we're like in the middle of Tiger Town. God bless Tiger Town. And we're driving around and like they were so drunk, they start yelling at each other. John jumps out of the car. I think he's then talking to a police officer. I'm losing my mind because I've got a drunk, you know, car full of drunk people. And we somehow get back, get back in the car. Guy doesn't say anything. We keep going. We go to another bar, the famous Bogies of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Another glorious place. I don't know if it's still open. It was until recently. I don't know if it is or not. We thought it'd be a really good idea to go to Tiger Stadium. And they used to leave the gates open. So we snuck into Tiger Stadium.
Wow.
We peed on the 50-yard line. We ran pass plays on the field. We found there was a guy.
Did you have an actual football?
Nope.
Just air football.
Imaginary. Like magic. Imaginary. Yeah. You know, we were just a great time. And there's a poor guy who wasn't very good on the team. His name was Thomas Dunson. Mr. Dunson left his playbook near the field or like on one of the routes out. So we picked that up and we took it. He may have had to run a lot of laps.
Do you still have it?
No, I wish I did though.
Oh, that'd be a good little souvenir.
And so anyway, so then we drive home to my apartment. We get pulled over on the way. Again, I was curbing my drinking as much as possible. The police officer was very nice to us, and he made us park the car, and told us we could walk home, which was about 5 or 6 blocks away. So I don't know who that was, but thank you for being nice to us that evening,
dude.
But it was glorious. Crazy 90 stories.
I have one more that this just reminded me of, which is so crazy. And we can delete it if you want to, but we have to talk about it at least. But that is the time when you were the designated driver for me in Dallas.
I was the designated driver.
You were actually like sober and you had like one beer. I was like—
One Coors Light.
You had one Coors Light. I was standing on the bar like doing shots. And then you got pulled over because you're speeding. You're driving me back to my apartment and Kelly Terrio is in the car.
And her friend. I was totally going to hook up with Kelly Terrio's friend.
Hooking up with her. I think I did hook up with her friend.
Yeah, actually. Because I left. Yeah. Because you, so and I drank one beer. You got wasted.
You didn't leave.
I drove.
So.
I drive. I get pulled over. This is how Texas is. Like, I'm scared. I have one beer. I'm like, okay, I'm fine, but what's going on? And the guy's like, what are you doing? Have you had a drink? I'm like, I don't know if I said zero or
no.
I'm the DD.
You had had some lawyer friend tell you to never do a breathalyzer and to not tell him shit.
Right.
And so you didn't. And even though you were stone cold sober and like you had been like a legit designated driver, there's no doubt about it. But he's like, sir, step out of the car.
He's like, do you refuse the breathalyzer? I'm like, I don't know. Like,
I'm not doing a sobriety test.
You're going to jail.
Yeah, you're like, I'm not doing a sobriety test. I'm not doing the breathalyzer. I'm not doing any of that. I'm totally fine. And he goes, you're going to jail, handcuffed. You goes, can anyone else drive his car?
And I was like, wasted.
I was wasted. And I said, I can drive his car. And then he sobriety field tested me. And I passed the sobriety field test. And he handed me, you're in the back of the cop car, handcuffed.
So
and he
so
handed
mad.
Me the keys to your car.
So mad.
And I drove them home and I hooked up with Kelly's friend.
I was so mad.
Oh my God. And I had it. So I stayed at Kelly's house. She was living at home at the time. And we were
had like a great time before we went out.
Yeah. And
George's house.
I had one tattoo at that stage of my life, and George Terrio hates tattoos, Kelly's dad.
Oh, George.
And so the next morning, I was hungover, and I took a shower, and he starts walking into the shower, typical George Terrio, like, what are you doing in there? Let me in there. That's my bathroom. I got to get in there. I'm like, dude. And I did not want him to see my tattoo so bad that I put the towel around my shoulders to cover the tattoo, but like exposed everything else to George. And of course, he didn't even flinch. But if he had seen the tattoo, he would have thrown me out on the curb right away.
Is anyone going to listen to this thing, by the way?
Or there's no.
Morons are babbling about their high school life.
But it's so fun. And then you got out of LSU, and then We had always talked about commercial real estate business, and that's something.
Dude, you got me my first job, or you got me first, but you got me first like two interviews.
I got you some interviews. Did I get you? Yeah. But you wound up at Moore Partners, right?
Moore Partners, MOHR.
Oh yeah,
those are molding days. That was like, you know what's the saying, like the like, all you need to know you learned in kindergarten or something like that. It's like all you need to know the commercial real estate business is like sit up outside Bob Moore's office for 12 months and.
Dude,
you'll get it.
He's a titan of the industry.
He
flies so under the radar
he is
too.
That.
And
he's done very well.
Yeah, he kills it. And so many great people have come out of there. And then so many people I know, I'm friends with Stephen Hemphill, who's been there his entire career.
Oh, Lord.
And he just like, and I am actually going to get him on the podcast to talk about it. But I mean, these guys, had such a great training program back then if you wanted to be a tenant rep broker and to just learn how to, I mean, you tell me, you did it.
Oh, so. It was great. Dude. So there was literally like, and he probably still does the same thing, but he would have a call bank and he'd have, you know, 6 to 12 people, right? All come in and they're just making phone calls for Bob. And you would get somebody on the phone and like, if Bob, he was always in the, most of the time he's always in the office. Unless he had to go travel for something. And he'd be on the phone there with you. He'd be like, bring it to my office. And transfer in the office. And Bob Moore with Moore Partners on the phone pitching the guy.
Yeah.
It was really great. And there was a couple of young guys and we would just, you know, dial for dollars. And we had a lot of fun. Matt Weezer was there. A guy named Nathan Lawrence, who's successful now.
Oh, yeah. They both are. I mean, Matt is a big time
at Stream,
like a partner there. Yeah. And then, yeah, Nathan Lawrence is now at KBC, the
Amazon guys.
The Amazon brokers. Yeah.
It was really funny because you'd be sitting there and you're like pitching someone and you're giving it all you got. And Nathan Lawrence would take a Nerf football and throw it off my head.
Dude.
In the middle of it. And I look back at it and the first couple times you get kind of mad because you're all into it. But then it was just like, it's part of the fun, right? Like you're just pitching some CFO with some company and boom, you get lit up with a flag football. And that was part of it, or a Nerf football. And that was part of it. You had to like stay on point and stay focused.
Yeah.
It was a game. But it was great. So I did that. I got a great story about it. So I decided to move to Los Angeles. I got a job at another interesting company called Equus.
What brought the Los Angeles move on? Were you actually decided like I want to go live in like Los Angeles?
I was dating a girl at the time who had a brother who was an actor in Los Angeles, and she came back from a visit out there. She's like, "We should move to LA." I'm like, "That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. It's really stupid." And she hung out with Donaghy. I don't know if he made the beginning of this podcast. He was on the other one that might have got deleted. So Scott Donaghy calls me. And he leaves me like a drunken message one night. And Scott and I traveled Europe twice, once after high school, once after college. And we go back to, you know, good friends, kindergarten, first grade. And he leaves me this voicemail that I pick up at like 7 a.m. It's like, "Jake, bro, you got to move to L.A. I'm out here. It's great. We're going to get a 2-bedroom, but if you want to come, we'll get a 3-bedroom. And it's just so easy, man. It's just like traveling around Europe. You just go." And I was like, something happened. I'm like, fuck it. So I knew the firms to call. I called them. I set up some interviews. I had some miles back then. So I flew out and I nailed the job. And I came back and told the gal we're going to move to LA. That didn't really work out after a while. But
LA worked out.
So I always thought I'd be there for a couple of years and leave. And I got in like, It was a great firm. It was called Equus. It was a small company run by this guy, Michael Silver, who sold the company for a lot of money. But they did the account business and they go after big accounts and lots of locations. And they were really good. And there's a handful of folks out there, you know, who are still really good in the business.
Which is basically
it's
what
now Cushman & Wakefield now.
Yeah, Moore did that. Like they're all about account business. So yeah, that was a good transition.
Yeah.
And you can really do that from anywhere.
Yeah.
And then you were at Equus and that's when you really, because at Moore, you're like, working.
What's your first job out of school, right? You're like, I'll be here for 12 years or maybe 2 years.
But Equus is when you became a real broker straight up.
Like, yeah, it was a more legit firm. Yeah.
Go make cold calls and win business.
Yeah, we did. We got some deals and I learned how to call local Los Angeles companies. And
did you work for a mentor there?
I had a couple of them.
Okay, but it was unofficial. You just went.
Yeah, I had. No, there's a guy named Bruce Hoffman who's no longer. Well, he might be back in business, but he's a great, great man. I don't know why he hired me. I came in with 20 extra pounds of college weight on me from Dallas. The guy's from Beverly Hills. I show up in his office in downtown LA. And I'm like, yeah, I can cold call people. I'm like, here's my list. Here's all the prospects I have. Here's what we're doing. I want to move to LA. And the guy's like, okay, here's a draw. 30 grand. Cool. And, looking back on it, I'm just like, what was that guy thinking? But it did.
Obviously, I know what he was thinking. He saw that you're.
This idiot's going to bring me 20 leads and maybe land a client out of it. Yeah. We did.
Like he knows how to make cold calls and set meetings. Like, that's a rarity in this life, man.
It is. You kind of learn that. But, we did. So I went to work for, we landed a couple accounts. And, I made, I think my second year there, I made 100 grand, which was like crazy. For a 24, 25-year-old. And it just kind of kept going a little bit from there. But so that lasted about 3 or 4 years. And there was a couple other firms in town that were – like I went to work at Cushman & Wakefield.
Right.
There's a great guy, this guy, Andrew Goodman, who runs all the leasing for Douglas Emmett in L.A. Great guy. Andrew, if you ever listen to this, I promise I'm not going to tell the Pink Flamingo story, but Pink Flamingo. And I went to Andrew. I'm like, hey, Andrew, like, I need to get to somewhere bigger. And he was at CNW. It was John Cushman's office in downtown. And they just did every big deal. I mean, he did, Disney, Fox, Texaco, NBC. I mean, he did everything.
This is when Cushman was Cushman and before they, got bought by private equity.
It's not the same.
So it was OG Cushman.
Yeah, and those guys, they were all
I worked there at that same time when you were there.
I mean, there's just a lot of people who are still in the business who learned from John, a lot of them around LA, and they're really great people, and they're great brokers. They have a lot of great clients. So I did that from 2005 to 2012, and those guys were just, they were so good at building relationships and networking, and living in the right neighborhoods and knowing the right people, and then they were really good at the commercial real estate business, right? So they really had it all. So I learned a lot from those guys.
Yeah, how to network, build relationships, and execute the business once you get it.
Yeah. It takes a long time.
It's really unique in our business compared to lots of other businesses where sales and execution are two separate divisions of the company. A lot of places are like that. I think it's rare to have the main sales person being the main execution person.
It's really hard. We're trying to separate on that on my team or draw some more separation around that more on my team now.
I do that too.
It's really hard to do.
There's a way to do it, but for those that can master both, like you most definitely have, that's an extreme rarity, and that's how you rise to the absolute top where you're at, man. Because that's where you are.
Wow, that's nice of you. I don't know about that. I got a ways to go.
Ted Simpson was your partner at Cushman.
The man.
And
he's great.
We've spent some fun times together here in Vegas, actually. Mm-hmm. And then you guys went to Avis & Young and opened up that office. Is that right?
We opened up the downtown office for Avis & Young.
Become a little more entrepreneurial for a cent.
It sounded great. I mean, you guys can come in and
you have equity.
Hire it. Yeah, there's some equity piece of that. I think I learned a lot through that process. It was a fine firm. The way our business was going is, we got to a point where I think for me, right, and no offense to anybody out there who works for Avis & Young, but for me, the firm was stuck in the middle. And as I did an evaluation on my business, the conclusion I came to is you want to be either really small or at a really big place.
100%.
And you don't really want to be in the middle. And I felt that for me, that was kind of in the middle. And, you know, I was like top five in the company. And I was like 37, 36, 37. I'm
big,
like
kind of a big fish in a middle-sized pond.
I guess so. I'm like, this is not right.
And so, no offense, because a great company and so many great people work there. And it depends on what your business strategy is too. And like you and I go after the same kind of clients, which are, you know, like, well, I mean, I don't know. That's not true necessarily.
I think for me, I was working really hard. I was doing everything myself that you described. And I was tapping out at a certain revenue, right? And I'm like, how do I do more? And I've built a lot of good relationships, a lot of good mentors outside of real estate. And, you know, the other conclusion I came to is I just needed leverage, right? And I needed a team and I needed a firm that could provide that leverage.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to make a couple million dollars in the brokerage business. It's really hard, and you can't do it without a lot of help.
Yeah,
or leverage or whatever you want to call it. Right. So for me, the conclusion was: look, I want to do, you know, bigger transactions, bigger clients. I want to go to a bigger place, and there was some kind of stuff before that, but I ended up going to CBRE in 2017.
You went to the biggest place.
It was the biggest place, which, by the way, I thought I'd never go to. And the guys running the LA office in LA were ex-Cushman Realty and Cushman Wakefield folks. And
yeah.
The really good people from there were now at CB, and so it was an easy conversation. And I remember calling Andy Ratner's the gentleman who runs the CBRE LA office. And I called him like, Andy, I need some advice, need some help. He's like, well, what are you talking about? I'm like, well, you know, I'm kind of looking around. I'm thinking about doing something. Here's what I'm thinking. I don't want to come to CBRE. That's not what I want to do. But I do need, like, it would be great to get together for breakfast and just talk. So he's like, Jake, no problem. So I show up to breakfast at the Lux Hotel in LA off the 405 and Sunset. And he brings Lou Horn with him. I don't know if you've ever heard of Lou Horn, but that gentleman is an amazing gentleman. And I leave the breakfast after meeting with Lou and Andy. I'm like, I'm going to go work there.
I'm going to CB. Let's go.
And it's great. You know, it worked out really well. I've got, you know, my partner now, Scott Stuber. We've been partners since 2005.
Yep.
We've got a team of almost 10 people. And you know, we're having fun.
You're killing
working
it.
Hard. Well, it's a tough market, Wardo. But
you at least do some industrial in there.
Well, it was nice to have that in our kind of back pocket.
Hedge yourself a little bit.
Yeah. No, but from that, I think like a lot of our clients are like this hybrid of office space and warehouse. And
yeah.
So we can spread it around a little bit.
Who's the food distribution company I was calling on them?
Do we want to bring clients' names up in this?
Yeah, I guess you're right. I don't think I ever mentioned mine, so fair enough.
I was gonna say that, but
no, there was a company that I got plugged into because some Colliers guys were chasing them, and I knew one of my fraternity brothers worked there, and then I got in there and I got all the way to the CFO, and they're like, yeah, Jake Bobak with CBRE handles our account. And I said, whoa, I'm out of here. Like, I have a rule. Like, I don't go chase friends' clients. Obviously.
Depends on the friend.
Yeah, exactly. But if you, like, no way. Yeah, and if you ever, you know, if you ever came up from a client.
Okay, so that's a good question, right? So dude, our business is extraordinarily competitive. It's internally competitive, right? I mean, I had a call earlier today about, like, me and another team is going after the same thing.
There's more internal competition in my life than external competition. At least there used to be. Like, I don't know if there is as much anymore.
But what do you do to differentiate?
What do I do?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I just have called on 50 companies.
You do supply chain
for 10 years. Yeah, I do a podcast, Trucking On with Ward Richmond, in your honor.
Plug, hashtag. Hashtag trucking on.
Yeah, I started, man, I did this podcast because I got so sick of hearing real estate podcasts about real estate. And like, what I really want to know is like, you know who I want to get on here and he might be able to help me out is Darla Longo. Like, I want to know like beasts of the industry and I want to hear their, I don't want to hear Darla Longo talk about investment sales. I want to hear her story on this podcast. Like Steve Belletti, another big time LA producer that's a good friend of mine. I don't want to hear Steve talk about the Inland Empire market. I want to hear the Steve Belletti story because I've already heard it, but it's so cool. And that's that. And I think that inspires people. And so, and also above everything else, like I just like having these conversations with no distractions with people that inspire me. And you're one of those. And I think you'll feel it. Like how often you get to have a 1 hour conversation talking about life with somebody when you're like totally dialed in. I think it's just cool. So it's been fun. And maybe it helps my business. Maybe it doesn't. I didn't do it like this is going to be something I use to win new clients necessarily. But I think like the more authentic you can be and the more knowledge you can drop, then that's just the basic rule of the universe. Like if you give, you shall receive.
Well, and, look, I think at this point, right, and is you want to do things that are fun, right? It's right. As much as you can. Work with people who are fun, or at least you have, you know, you want to work with people you really get along with.
So like, how do you execute differently? Because you've asked me, I mean, my like thing that I do is I specialize really in transportation and logistics companies. And that makes up probably 80% of the work that I do is representing very large, powerful transportation logistics companies. So I know that business really well. So I'm in that vertical. And that's where I think I've got an edge. And I went to Woodrow. So what do you have?
That's the edge. Well, that's an edge. That gives you street smarts and you can run circles around all the private school kids and get a bunch of clients before they even know what happened. I mean, there's a lot there, right? But if I had to, you know, what's our differentiator is, and we preach this on our team a lot is results through process.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's, we have a process that we run. Everyone's got a process, I guess. But we're just, we hold to it. And
were doing that back like in 2008. Like I remember you sharing like these process dashboards with me when I was 2 years in the business. Because yeah. I took my band hiatus. And then that whole time, like you gained like 5 years of expertise over me doing commercial real estate or something. And I remember you sharing that with me. I don't know if you remember it, but it was like a big placemat kind of like, here's all, anyway.
It's gotten better. It's gotten way better.
Sure. Sure. That was 2008. It's 2023. I can't even imagine.
It's gotten way better. I think it's just the basics, right? Like communication, process, results through process. We preach that a lot. Someone told me one time, real estate's all about thank you notes and follow-up. And we just take that to a whole nother level, right?
How so?
I'd say from from a follow-up standpoint, we're just over communicative, right? So every Friday, if you're a client of ours, it doesn't matter what the project is, it doesn't matter if there's nothing going on in your project, you get a Friday update. And it's something really little and really simple. But in
so disciplined to be able to do that every Friday.
All of our young, every single Friday.
How warm and fuzzy would that make me feel if I was your client?
Every Friday.
I love it.
Every Friday. Every Friday.
Yeah.
And it's just, again, it's just kind of simple and stupid, but maybe that's stupid, but you know, it matters.
What if you're working on like 10 projects with someone?
Well, you get one email with the 10 projects update.
Yeah.
Right. But I think it's like one, you go into Friday feeling good and you saw something. I remember buying a house in 2013 is my first house. And if you're in our business and you go work with a residential real estate broker, no offense to residential real estate broker there. But I'm like, wait, what the fuck is going on with this deal? What's happening? What's going on? And I just didn't know. And so I was like, where's an update? And I actually have a mentor who does this, and he's in the insurance business and kind of gave me the idea. And about 5 years ago, we started putting into action. And again, it's just getting in the habit of doing it. I don't think a lot of people do it.
I always say, like, the secret to commercial real estate is answering phone calls, returning phone calls and emails. Like, that alone, I mean, you can tell who the top producing brokers are by how fast they respond to phone calls and emails, like, in general. Like,
But I think, I'm trying to find a different system for that, because that'll drive you crazy and I think run you ragged.
I like that. You're right. But I don't see how that's, but still, man, doesn't it feel nice when someone responds to your emails? So how are you going to get around that? Because that is something that is, that I like to think of myself as a pretty new school broker, but that is something that it could be perceived as antiquated. But I feel like when you're in the service business and you're not selling a product.
Don't get me wrong. I mean, look, we have a team and we have systems in place to get back.
Yeah.
Right. So at this point in our career, like, the most effective place for me to be is out with clients and out with prospects, wherever that might be.
But if a client emails someone if they email you and maybe you don't have time to do it, you can pop it to one of your teammates and they're going to respond immediately.
Correct.
So you're still doing something. And like, that game of tennis is how I look at it, is you get the ball hit to you. My job is to hit it back over the net with absolute precision. So hopefully it doesn't need to come back because the question's answered and the problem solved, mm-hmm. but it comes back as fast as possible, because that, to me, like, and I've built those processes for our team, just because when I'm on the other side and somebody who's like my service provider for something that I'm doing, when they email me or text me right back and say, and maybe it's, I'll get to that in a second.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I agree just with that.
Hey,
just an acknowledgement.
I'm
like,
here.
Hey,
I heard you. Like, when I get ghosted by people, that's when, I mean, my whole business plan falls apart when I have partners, like a co-broker or something, that they don't email me back in that manner, because then I forget about it. Cause I've got too many balls going over too many nets. And if I don't have partners that play tennis with me and they just let things sit, then that just killed. I mean, I don't know how else to do our business besides like these, like, rapid fire responses, but I could be wrong.
Process and systems.
Yeah, baby. I got those, but that's part of my processes. Yeah. And it's one of our core operating principles: operate with urgency, yet execute with certainty. So you got to do both.
Okay. I like
all of this. And I talked to Michael Sartain, and if you listen to his podcast, business.
That's going to be a lot more exciting than the Jake Bobek podcast, by the way.
I think commercial real estate people who's on the podcast right now, though, because you fly pretty much under the radar too. You're not, I mean, I know you and everything that you're doing, and you're in the top tier, my brother. So, but Sartain has like this perfectly blocked schedule, and he tells his clients which times of the day they're allowed to call him and stuff. But his clients all, like, he has 600 people that want to go throw parties with, like, chicks at him, and they look up to him like he's, you know, this guy that is going to teach them how to own life. And
see, he's
we
got
help
his,
our clients, but they don't look system. At us the same way he's that his clients systems. Look at him.
Hey, if his system works,
dude,
man, it
he's
works.
Got his system in place. I asked him what his morning ritual is. He gave me his 24-hour ritual, and it is like mapped out. He's like, bro, here's what I do now. Like, every hour is mapped out of every day. It was pretty wild.
It's a little too much for me.
Like, I can't do it. Yo, yeah, the whole thing.
Good for him. That's the military discipline.
Military and he, man, endless energy. Moving on. Processes and systems. I love that. Okay, so what advice would you give to your younger self? Do exactly what you're planning to do, Jake.
No. Invest, buy Amazon.
buy
more
Amazon, baby.
Buy more Snapchat. I mean, in our world, I mean, the tech
is Snapchat
market just,
still good?
Well, it was founded down the street from us.
Yeah.
You know, and went public is a big deal. But there's so much tech.
Is it still a thing? I don't hear about it. I'm not really on the internet too much.
I don't know it from that, but I know the stock ticker. I just know from a from.
But their stock's good. Is their stock still?
I have no idea. Let's find out.
They still have stock.
Let's
let's look.
They do.
Amazon.
They didn't SPAC. They didn't SPAC, so they must be okay.
I just construction managed my first project, and
I don't know if Snap's a buy or not, but it's down. Not a good year so far. I
haven't heard about it lately. Just from people talking about it. Michael Sartain did not mention it at all. Anyone's going to mention something that's popular in social media,
well, I bring it up because it's in Santa Monica, which is a suburb and
your old right hometown.
Yeah, my old hometown.
Obviously, like, do that kind of stuff.
But I mean, the tech revolution from, I don't know if it was a revolution, but the tech business from 2008, 2009, which didn't really exist in LA before that. I mean, just this massive explosion.
Yeah.
I mean, Snap, Riot Games is a huge one.
You're friends with the Goat Guy, is an e-commerce company that I love.
You like this?
Yeah, dude, look at these.
You spent way too much on those Travis Scott's.
Dude.
1500?
They make me feel good.
Can't get any discounts though. I've asked my friend many times, but you know, it's a exchange. They don't sell any products, so there's no discounts.
Do you know when I got into Nikes, I read Shoe Dog by Phil Knight. Have you ever read that book?
No, but I think there's a movie or something.
Yeah, it's coming out. Yeah. Like, he's the Michael Jordan deal. The movie's based all around the Michael Jordan deal, but the book Shoe Dog is his whole life story, and that's included in it. But
I think I don't know if I read the book, but I know I've read the excerpt from the story where he chases him down and convinces him to go with them instead of Converse.
Yeah, but just one of the things, like, Nike's just has always been so incredible at marketing. And I mean, Phil Knight's the king of it. And I love marketing, and reading that book inspired me. So I got into Nike's, and I heard something too, like, the Travis Scott's have a backwards Nike logo on them. You know what I mean? And they created these, like, for these sneakerheads or whatever back in the day, and they would give, like, that meant you're part of this club of people that knew about the sneakers, and you'd get the one with the backward logo on it. But I think that kind of marketing stuff is so cool and innovative, and that's why I do pay top dollar for these shoes. I know there are people that they get a lot of excitement from going and figuring out how to buy these shoes, like, at retail before they sell out, and then they resell them or whatever. And that gives them lots of good, warm, fuzzy feelings. And for me, it just gives me warm, fuzzy feelings to, like, be part of their upside. And I can thankfully do that. And I don't buy too many fancy things, but I like the Travis Scott's.
Awesome.
They're fun. Okay. I am pretty bougie, so I don't know what I'm talking about. So, like, let's be real. Rapid fire, and then we're going to go get dinner.
That sounds perfect.
And play some blackjack?
Sure.
We can go hard or, like...
Oh, dude, we got some business tomorrow. We got to keep it...
On the blackjack table.
Oh, well, you... I mean, there's only one speed for you. Come on.
I'm not going to argue. What's your morning ritual?
Ooh, I've got a good morning ritual right now. Wait, I have two dogs... new puppy who's like 9 months, two labs. I wake up between 6 and 6:30 and take them on a walk, a hike above our house every morning.
And when COVID hit, you lived in Santa Monica, and then you sold your house and moved to Santa Barbara.
Yeah.
Has that been a great decision to get?
Pretty glorious.
Get to Santa Barbara.
Yeah. The short of it is all the schools in Santa Monica were closed, and we had to put Harrison into kindergarten.
Yeah.
And the public school down the street was closed. That was an option. The private schools were, you know, in West LA, you got to go interview for the private schools, and that's a whole thing. And they were all closed. And there's a school in Santa Barbara that was open, and I had some friends up there, and my wife Carly's family lives a little past there. And we rented a house down the street from the school, put the boys in September 2020. Harrison went to... kindergarten. Walker went to an outdoor preschool on the bluffs of Carpinteria. There was like a couple of hippie gals playing the guitar. And
did you and Carly walk in there and like What is
it was amazing.
Why didn't we get to go to preschool here?
No, it's a pretty glorious place. We're very lucky to have found it. We were never found it without COVID. It's always one of those places that you would drive past and go, wow, it'd be amazing to live here. And then you're like, well, you could never do that because it's, the commute's a little too far. It's about 65, 70 miles from LA. But you know, with the Zoom revolution, it's possible.
I think I would fit in there. Should I become your neighbor?
You need a little. It's a little slower. It's a little slower paced up there.
I don't, dude. It's a great place. You really like don't understand. Like I don't do any social activities other than like business dinners and self help conferences.
You would like it. You should come out. Bring the kids.
Yeah, I would love to do that. What's your favorite hotel?
Oh, the Fane Hotel in Miami. I don't know if I'm saying it right. The F-A-E-N-E.
Fane, you just told me Fane about Hotel. It. You were just
wow,
in Miami.
What a glorious place. The bar, they have a bar there. I was there 2 weeks ago called The Living Room. And okay.
Never been.
I was there a night before meeting some clients. And it's like something, it's like from a scene out of a Great Gatsby, out of The Great Gatsby. And the room is huge. It's beautiful. There's a guy belting Sinatra songs. The food's great. It's a nice place. I highly recommend the Fane Hotel
check that out.
In South Beach.
Four of my biggest clients are in Miami, so I go there quite a bit.
Just you got
to
stay
catch
there.
Up with them. Yeah. Have you been reading anything?
Yes.
Any?
I've got a few good.
What one book would you share that's worth talking about?
Well, I just went fishing in the Florida Keys and I read To Have and To Have Not, or I listened to it on the flight down there, which is Hemingway and the Florida Keys fishing and some stuff. So that was kind of cool.
You're so sophisticated with the Hemingway book.
Well, I just happened to be going down there.
That sounds great.
Here, I'll tell you what I've read a few. Let me just pull them up.
Have you read Jimmy Johnson's Swagger? I keep talking about it. I just finished
that.
It. It's so good. Especially like the first part through the Dallas Cowboys. And
shit.
When we watched that game, we were all hanging out and, you know, we all went to high school together. The Cowboys won 3 Super Bowls when we were in high school.
And they haven't won since.
They haven't. And
thanks,
like,
Jerry.
Do you know how much we took that for granted back then? It was just like, oh, whatever. We're going to win Super Bowls for the next 10 years.
I'll tell you a great book actually that I read about 6 months ago. It's called The Fish That Ate the Whale.
Ah.
Very cool.
Is it about me and CBRE's relationship?
No, you know what it is it's Zumarez, I think was the guy. What was the guy's name? Hold on. Anyways, he was an immigrant from Eastern Europe, ends up in the South in New Orleans. This is like late 1800s. And you know, the fruit companies were like Google of that time period. I didn't know that. And bananas were a really big, like a new thing. And like all these bananas are being brought from Honduras or wherever they're growing them in South America and up to the United States. And it's a big, like the fruit companies are just huge, big shipping thing. So this guy figures out that they would, you know, as the bananas would come into Mississippi and work their way down the coast, they would throw out the rotten bananas, or the ones that were just starting to rot, and because it would spread and all the rest of them, right? So they're throwing them overboard. So he talks a couple guys at the boats into giving him the bananas. He puts them on a big truck, or he buys them from them. Puts them on a train, and he goes from like Mobile, I think, all the way down to New Orleans, and sells the bananas off the train. And, you know, as he goes through in life, he ends up being he starts as like the lowest guy, as low as low as lows can go. He ends up being the CEO of the United Fruit Company or something like that. There's 3 or 4 buildings in New Orleans named after him. At Tulane in New Orleans named after him. Huge donor to Tulane. And he was a billionaire in the 20s and 30s. And there's some cool stories about how he like, you know, navigated like certain small wars in South America or like Costa Rica and Central America, I guess that would be. But it's a cool book. The Fish That Ate the Whale.
I have a friend of mine. He's supply chain Mensa. He's been CEO of companies before, like major companies. And we were talking, and he has a friend that's in the coffee business, and he figured out a way to like get sailboats to transport coffee from like Costa Rica or something over to Europe. And he's doing this and basically doesn't have to spend any money on gas or whatever. Like there's no energy needed because you're flying with the wind in your sails and transporting all this coffee. And then he's like, oh, wait. And he's making great money just selling the coffee, but not thinking about the logistics aspect of it. It's like, I can load this baby up with other stuff to go back. And like, yeah. And now he's just like, making money being a logistics company too, even though it was just this, like trying to be like a green, like eco-friendly coffee company and still doing that. And then all these shippers and everybody, they want the eco-friendly stuff going on. He's built these sailing boats that sail and can haul cargo. It's wild. But man, it's just like someone else's trash is another man's treasure.
There you go.
Okay.
A lot of ways to make a buck.
What, do you have a favorite quote?
Failing to plan is planning to fail.
Do you know whose favorite quote that is?
John Wooden's. Who's?
Cole Hooper.
Oh, is that you're the guy who works
yeah,
with you?
Yeah, so Cole. Yeah, you've met Cole before.
I have. Great guy.
That's his favorite.
It's a good one.
What song would you want to share today? Do you have a favorite song right now? Or
you know what I've been kind of into recently is The Cure. I would share The Head on the Door.
Right on, getting into it. Some 80s music.
Yeah, the good 80s music.
Yeah.
There's some bad 80s music.
There's both. What about a charity or cause you donate money to?
I sit on the board of the Children's Bureau.
Or time to.
Children's Bureau.
The Children's what?
The Children's Bureau. I sit on the board of the Children's Bureau in Los Angeles.
What is that?
Great organization, been around for 100 plus years, helps prevent child abuse. In downtown, I've been involved with them since about 2006, and my involvement has just grown with them. So we've raised a lot of money for them, had a lot of fun, made a lot of friends there. It's great, great, great organization.
Amazing.
Donate to the Children's Bureau. Allforkids.org. Look it up. Send us some money.
Yeah, we'll put it in the show notes, so anyone that listens to this we're going to have 10 solid listeners for sure.
10.
And like, hey.
Dude, no one's going to make it this far, though.
You never know. You never know. Okay, so on, like, if you had $100 million, what would you invest it in?
You would, whatever would return 4%. The most, like, simple investment, like, 4% index fund, like checking deposits.
That's it. Just low 4%. Risk.
4%.
Low risk.
Protect it, man.
Protect it.
I'm in the like, I have to be more risky now and take a lot of risks and grow my wealth. If I had that, I'd just protect it.
That's all you need. I like that answer. What's on your vision board for this year?
Oh. Business or?
Yeah, whatever.
Family, fun.
Family fun, like sounds better to me.
So, you know what I'm really excited about? This would be boring for some people, but we're taking the boys, I have two boys, 5 and 7, we're taking skiing.
For the first time? I just did that with my kids.
Was it awful or glorious?
We went to Vail.
Okay.
Gina came too, so it's like bi-nuclear family ski trip, very dicey. Our nanny came too, so she was there to help. I will say it's very difficult to put ski clothes on your children. Very expensive to go shopping for ski clothes for your children. And then like transporting them like with ski boots on, like walking to ski school. But that is very stressful.
I can't wait.
Especially if you thankfully don't have an ex-wife, but I mean, that's probably, I don't know. Gina and I actually laughed about it. And like, this is basically like the same dynamic we had on all of our vacations throughout our marriage. So nothing's really changed. But yeah, like getting them there, but then you drop them off at ski school at 9 a.m. and they're glory, there till 3 p.m. And then I just would go, I would just go rip it. I'd ski my nice groomed blues and veil, and I would have like a little chili down at the bottom of the mountain. Yeah.
Sounds perfect.
Oh, but that's the best thing. It's like this daycare and they're learning how to do it. And they're so excited. And you stop by and you see them at their lessons for a little bit. Like, all right, I'm going to go.
So I'm stoked.
Eat some chili. Where are y'all going skiing?
Park City or Deer Valley.
Beautiful.
Yes.
I've heard that's amazing. We went to Vail. That's a great place for kids. I like Vail because you can fly direct from Dallas. Mm. Mm. So where do people find you?
Oh, man. I got to beef up my social. I find them. They don't find me.
That's so true. I can see that about you.
I mean, I wish.
LinkedIn.
Yeah. So you'll laugh at this. So we have on our team, we have a social media contest every month. So everybody lines up their social media posts and then
you're going to have a good one coming up.
You count the likes and whoever gets the most likes wins a bottle of wine at the end of the month. I need to post more. I'm like one or two or three posts. And the team's a little sad. It's like 12 posts a month, which is not, I don't think that's.
You need to just hire.
I need Michael Sarton to come supercharge our.
You should.
Our social media.
Oh, yeah. I had Natalie Wainwright on today. If you don't know her, she is like a social media expert. She does consulting services on the side besides being a real estate broker. So, who else? Grant Cardone is really good at that. Like he'll have a class or something. But you just need to hire someone to just go hammer it. I like doing the podcast, obviously. I like doing LinkedIn. I'm currently deactivated on Instagram and I haven't been on Facebook in like 6 years or something.
I still have it because I don't think I've posted on Facebook. I probably should,
but anyway. Love you, brother. Let's go play some blackjack, maybe have some dinner and go to bed early because we both have big days tomorrow. And then tomorrow night.
I think we got to go deep.
We go deep. Let's do it. Vegas, baby. Vegas. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in to this episode of Truckin' On. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, don't be shy. Please like, share, leave a 5-star review. So that we can keep doing what we're doing. Stay safe out there on the road. Keep on trucking. Adios.